This episode of the Axon Credit Podcast is brought to you by Indeed. Right now, listeners can get a free $75 credit to upgrade your job post at indeed.com/creative. This episode is also sponsored by stamps.com. Stop wasting your time going to the post office. Go to stamps.com instead. Use promo code ACCIDENTAL at stamps.com. Hey everyone, welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I'm your host. I'm the author of The Accidental Creative, Die Empty, Louder Than Words, Herding Tigers, and the new book, The Motivation Code, available now wherever books are sold or at motivationcode.com. We are inundated. I wrote in The Accidental Creative about this dynamic called the ping. The ping is this perpetual pinprick in my gut that says something out there might be more important than what's in front of you. And it has us living in this state of continuous partial attention. I'm always kind of here, but I'm also kind of somewhere else at the same time. And we don't do our best work that way. We cannot do our best work that way. Well, one of the primary culprits of this constant inundation and pinging that we experience is email. You know, email, most of us have a love-hate relationship with email. You know, we like the convenience of it, but we dislike the convenience because it means anybody can reach out to us anytime they want. And often they create friction in our life that we have to deal with. And they don't have to deal with the friction. We have to deal with the friction. Every email somebody sends us then creates an expectation that we're going to respond to them. And sometimes those emails can go back and forth. You're scheduling a meeting. Any number of things can happen that can create needless complexity in our life. Well, today's guest has a solution for us. I'm excited to welcome him back to the show. We've had him on a couple of times before. He's one of my favorite authors. His name is Cal Newport. And Cal has just written a book. It's called A World Without Email. And we had a really great conversation. I mean, as you can imagine, I thought, yeah, A World Without Email, this is a fantasy novel. But you know, Cal has some really strong arguments to make for why we need to put email in the rearview mirror and think differently about how we interact with one another in the course of our life and our work. So Cal Newport coming up here in just a minute. Very excited. Before we do, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by Indeed. So hiring is one of those things that you do not want to mess up. You can't. Listen, we talk all the time on the show about how the people that you invest in, the people who are part of your organization, if you get the people right, you get the process right, the product's going to take care of itself. Well, you have to get the people right. You need to hire great people if you want to take your business to the next level. With stakes this high, there's only one choice, Indeed. Now, let me tell you why. Indeed.com is the hiring site that helps you find quality candidates with Indeed Instant Match. Indeed searches through the millions of resumes in their database to help show you great candidates instantly. So you can do the part you really need faster, which is meeting and hiring great people. Unlike some hiring sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility, delivering a quality shortlist faster. So with Indeed, there are no long-term contracts and you can pause your account at any time and you only pay for what you need. How refreshing is that? With Instant Match, you will see a list of great candidates with zero wait. And Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all other job sites combined, according to Talent Nest. Indeed delivers 1.5 times more hires than internal referrals, according to Talent Nest. So here's the deal. Want your quality shortlist fast? You need Indeed. Right now, our listeners can get a free $75 credit to upgrade your job post at indeed.com/creative. That's Indeed's best offer available anywhere. So get a free $75 credit at indeed.com/creative. Again, that's indeed.com/creative. Offer valid through March 31st. Terms and conditions apply. We thank Indeed for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. Well, it's so good to have back on the show today, Cal Newport. Cal's the author of, I mean, I've got to say it, Cal, you're the author of several of my favorite books, books that I most recommend to other people. I have a son who is about to go off to college, and he will be sent off with a copy of So Good They Can't Ignore You, which I think is such an amazing book for anybody early in their career, especially. But frankly, I got so many insights, even being, you know, an old geezer now, I got so many insights out of that book. He also wrote the book that I see most recommended on the web, and I also recommend to people as well, which is Deep Work, which is a phenomenal book. His new book is called A World Without Email, which in many ways kind of feels a little bit like a continuation of what he wrote about in Deep Work. So I'm excited to dive in. Cal, welcome back to the Axon Creative Podcast.
Todd, it's always a pleasure. And look, I don't know if I mentioned this last time I was on your show, but your book, Die Empty, is that's the first hardcover book I ever gave a cover blurb for. So we have this interesting connection. That was the first time that I had a blurb on a cover. So I give you that extra distinction that makes this connection, you know, all the more special.
Oh, that's so cool. Well, I think I've told you this before, and thank you, by the way, for that cover blurb. That was really cool. I think I told you this before, but I was about to turn in my manuscript for Die Empty, and I was on a flight to Istanbul, Turkey, to do a speaking engagement. And I read your book, So Good They Can't Ignore You, basically cover to cover on that flight. And when I landed, I just had this sense of dread. I was like, Cal just wrote the book I wanted to write, which is so funny. I mean, they're very different books, obviously, but I was so impressed with the book. And just really loved your work. So I was deeply grateful that you were willing to do that. But we're not here to talk about my books. We're here to talk about your book, A World Without Email, which is, of course, a science fiction novel, right? This is a different turn. No, I'm kidding. It's not.
It's a fantasy novel. It's a dystopian world in which no one gets anything done and we're all killed by zombies.
Right. So I've got to ask the obvious question. Why would you write this book, A World Without Email? Because clearly at this point, like, we're not living in a world without email. So what is the purpose of this book for you?
Well, so if you go back to 2016, if you go back to Deep Work, you know, the idea there was, focus is being undervalued. Like, we may have forgotten how much value we get out of undistracted work, being able to work on one thing at a time. And I didn't get much into that book about why we were having a hard time focusing. I was like, yeah, we're on email too much. We're on Slack too much. Like, we should probably do less of that. And the reaction to that book was, you know, Cal, I don't think you understand the degree to which the need to constantly be connected and constantly be checking in boxes, constantly be communicating, the degree to which this has been completely ingrained into what it even means to work. And that kicked off basically a 5-year process of trying to understand, why is our work become just dominated by communication? What is the impact of that? And can we do better? What would that look like? And it took 4 years, because I finished this manuscript in 2020. I started working on it in 2016. My earliest interviews for that book are in 2016. It took me 4 years to pull together all these threads. And it was a huge epic story that emerged, that the way we're working today is A, fundamentally arbitrary, B, devastating for both our productivity and happiness, and C, is almost definitely not going to stick around much longer.
So in those 4 years, before we dive into talking about the content of the book, in those 4 years, in your perception, have things gotten better or have they gotten worse over the last 4 years?
I think there's a change coming that I am picking up. So I think the behavior that's the problem, which is this workflow that I call the hyperactive hive mind, which let me just define up front so we know what we're talking about. So what I identify as the culprit in this book, the villain of the story, is this workflow that I call the hyperactive hive mind. It says the primary way that we collaborate is that we work things out on the fly with back and forth unscheduled messages. This used to be just an email. Tools like Slack give you another way of doing it, but it's all the same idea. Back and forth unstructured messaging is how we're going to collaborate. Mm-hmm. This hyperactive hive mind workflow has taken over most of the knowledge sector, and it's this workflow that I think is really a problem. What I call my book A World Without Email, I really mean a world without the hyperactive hive mind as being the main way that we collaborate, not a world in which the tool of email goes away, because it's, of course, useful for certain things. The hive mind has gotten more hyperactive. I think the pain point of the hyperactive hive mind, I documented the book, has gotten worse from 2016 to 2020. It's the last place I have a data point. But there's also a response brewing among CEOs at Silicon Valley, among the investor class that wasn't there in 2016, where people are beginning to realize, wait a second, we're leaving huge amounts of productivity on the table. Huge amounts of employee dissatisfaction is being caused unnecessarily. There is going to be a huge advantage to moving past the hive mind and being first to do that. So the hive mind is as worse as it's ever been, but I've never seen so much interest as I do right now in how do we get past it.
It raises a question because I think so many of us are, I wouldn't say maybe not addicted to the tools we use to communicate. I mean, it certainly plays out like addiction in our lives. You know, how often we are checking, you were following the ping to see if there's anything there, see if there's any notification, or breaking our workflow to go check and see if anything. I always say that it's basically it's, you know, checking to see if anything out there is more important than what's in front of me. You know, it's kind of the way that it plays out, and it interrupts our workflow. But, you know, why do you think that these tools have taken such a hold of us? I mean, I think we sense the anxiety that they can create, but why do you think that we continue to use tools that we know probably aren't necessarily helping our workflow in the way we would want?
Because we don't have an obvious alternative. So the problem with the hyperactive hive mind, the problem that keeps us checking our inboxes again and again, is that we implicitly decided that unstructured back and forth messaging is just how we figure everything out. Mm-hmm. It's how we talk to our colleagues. It's how we talk to vendors we're working with. It's how we talk to clients. It's how we talk to interesting people. Everything happens just back and forth unscheduled messaging. Shoot me a message. You can shoot one back. I'll shoot you another one. We use this as the main way that we collaborate. So the reason why I think we've had such difficulty trying to solve the problem of email overload in the inbox itself is that the inbox is not the issue. If the primary way that you collaborate is with these unscheduled back and forth messaging, if you say, I'm going to check my inbox less, or I'm going to batch, or I'm going to have no notifications, or I'm going to use better subject lines or better response time norms, any of these types of common solutions, they can't solve the problem because the underlying workflow demands you to be engaged. When you step away from that back and forth scrum, you miss things. People are waiting for you. The gears of progress in your organization begin to grind to a halt. And so my big insight is, if we're going to solve the miseries that are being created, and we can document them, but they're pretty terrible, what happens when you have to check an inbox once every 6 minutes? We can't solve these with habits. We have to actually go down and say, we're replacing the hyperactive hive mind with alternatives. Here is our new process for how we deal with client communication. Here is our new process for how we deal with podcast episode editing and production. Here is our process for how we deal with putting together a new white paper for our software product. We're going to be explicit about how it works, and we're going to try to minimize the amount of unscheduled back and forth communication required to execute these processes. You do this process after process in your life, in your business, the pressure on the inbox is released. You don't need to be in there for your work to make progress. And it gets reduced down to what it really should be, which is a useful tool if you need to broadcast information or send files or information to someone. Like, yeah, I'll use this instead of a fax machine. But it's not something that you're going to be at once every 6 minutes.
You know, one of the things that you write about in the book that was interesting to me, I'd never considered, even in all the work that I do with organizations, but you know, you wrote in the book at one point, and I can't remember which chapter it's in, you said, sometimes we have to increase complexity in order to make things function more smoothly. You know, I think there's so much emphasis on reducing complexity. Could you explain that principle a little bit? Talk a little bit about what you mean by that.
One of the reasons why the hive mind is so popular is that it's convenient and it's flexible and it's easy. You only have to learn one tool, which is an easy tool, and that's email. It's entirely flexible. Like, no matter what happens, you know what the procedure is. Shoot off a message to the people involved. You know, hey, this client's leaving or has a new question. What do you think about this? What's your thoughts? What should we do about this? Oh, here's an issue. Oh, what do we do about that? So it's completely flexible and it's completely convenient. In the moment, if you need something, oh man, I'm stuck, and your organization operates with the hive mind, like, this is great. I can just shoot off a message to Todd because we're all in our inboxes all the time. He'll send me back what I need. So it's also convenient in the moment. Those are really sticky traits. The problem is, when it comes to producing good work, when it comes to profit, when it comes to producing products that are better than what other people are producing, or content that's sharper than what other people is writing, convenience, flexibility, and easiness are not the right metrics to optimize. In the world of work, our goal is not to make the work we do as convenient as possible. Our goal is to make what we produce as good as possible. And that sometimes is going to lead to processes or systems that are more of a pain to put into place. It maybe takes more time, it's harder to get them right, and some minor bad things happen, but they prevent you from having to do all of this back and forth messaging. That we have to get used to the fact is worth it, right? So if we're going to replace the hive mind with other things, those other things are going to be more of a pain than the hive mind. But if being more of a pain means that A, I'm much more happy in my work, and B, I can produce 2 or 3x higher quality product, from a business perspective, that's a no-brainer. So we've been seduced by somehow thinking that the most convenient possible way, or reducing friction on information, somehow that this is going to alchemize in the value. It doesn't. Direct production of things is what we need to do, and having to check inboxes all the time gets in the way of that. So we have to be ready for maybe a little bit less convenience in how we collaborate.
You know, it's I think we often sacrifice efficiency on the altar, or we sacrifice effectiveness on the altar of efficiency. You know, we're willing to be ineffective if it means that we feel like we're really efficient. You know, and I think that's some of what you're describing there. I want to, in some ways, try to take this down to the personal level for anyone listening who says, "Okay, that's great, Cal. That's wonderful theory." But you don't understand my situation, right? I'm a manager in an organization. This is how we work. Or I'm an individual. Maybe I'm a freelancer and I'm working with multiple clients and this is just how they work. What are some practical things that we can do to help us deal with that hyperactive hive mind, even if we're still caught up in the system? I mean, maybe we can't change the macro system, but are there things we can do individually to help us deal with that dynamic of the hyperactive hive mind?
Right. Well, even as individuals, you should adopt this process-oriented mindset of, okay, my work is actually made up of various processes that repeatedly I execute, like the process for answering client questions, the process for, you know, whatever, doing reviews of my employees, whatever it is. Implicitly, you have a bunch of these processes that again and again you execute, most of them probably in some sort of collaboration with other people, and it produces something on the other end that's useful or valuable. Think about your work in terms of those processes. And then ask for each of these, is there an alternative to just rock and rolling in my inbox for executing this process that will reduce the amount of unscheduled back and forth messaging required to actually accomplish whatever its goal is? Even if you can't control anyone else in your organization or anyone else on your team, even if you're just doing this type of optimization asymmetrically, so just trying to change what you could control, you could still greatly reduce the pressure on your inbox. Because again, the whole game here is reducing the amount of unscheduled messages that might pop up that you have to respond to. That's the thing that's cognitively devastating. That's the thing that's making us miserable. And so some of these changes might be very simple. Like I'm switching over to using a meeting scheduling software like Calendly, like I know you use, Todd, or Schedule Once or Acuity or something like this, so that when we have to set up a meeting, instead of there having to be five back and forth emails, I can just say like, yep, here's a link that has all of my times because I know you're busy. Choose the one that's going to work for you. That's a process you've optimized to reduce back and forth messages. Maybe you have to work with someone else on producing a report. Without even telling them it's a process, you can basically recruit them into a low interactive process by saying something like, all right, here's what I think we should do. I'll have this report into the first draft in the Dropbox by noon on Monday. Take a look at it Monday afternoon and add your comments. I am going to grab it on Tuesday to put those into place, and we'll get it to the designer. The designer, it'll be in the Dropbox by COB Tuesday, so you can pick it up anytime after that. When you're done, whatever, right? I mean, I don't want to go too much into the detail, but you're kind of just explaining in your email, essentially, okay, here's how we're going to do this in such a way that you're reducing the need to just, okay, I'll just shoot you an email. You shoot me an email. We'll just go back and forth via email. So you can even recruit people into low message processes. Just don't call it that. Just don't tell them that's what you're doing. Yeah. Just do it. And they'll be like, well, I'm just glad you have a plan. Great. You know, Cal's on it. Good. I'll grab it Tuesday. I'm busy. I'm going to move on. Right. So even asymmetrically optimizing processes makes a huge difference.
Hey, we're going to dive back into the conversation with Cal in just a minute. Before we do, I want to let you know today's episode is also brought to you by Stamps.com. Let's face it, taking trips to the post office is probably not how you want to spend your time. I know it's not how I want to spend my time. That's why I recommend mailing and shipping online at Stamps.com. Stamps.com allows you to mail and ship anytime, anywhere, right from your computer. You can send letters, you can ship packages, and you can pay a lot less with discounted rates from USPS, UPS, and more. Stamps.com has saved businesses thousands of hours and tons of money. Accidental Creative uses Stamps.com for all of our shipping. We love it. We've been using it for years, and it saved us so much time and energy. With Stamps.com, you get the services of the U.S. Post Office and UPS all in one place. Plus, you get big discounts on mailing and shipping rates. You know, I ship so many books out to clients, out to people who want signed copies of the book. And it's so much easier to use stamps.com to do that because we can package and label, and all we have to do is drop it off at the post office or at UPS, or we can even arrange to have it picked up, which is absolutely incredible. We love it. Simply use your computer to print official US postage 24/7 for any letter, any package, any class of mail, anywhere you want to send. And once your mail is ready, just schedule a pickup or drop it off. It's that simple. And you get discounts up to 40% off post office rates and up to 62% off UPS shipping rates. Not to mention stamps.com is a fraction of the cost of the expensive postage meters that you could buy. Listen, I think stamps.com is a no-brainer, saving you time and money. It's no wonder nearly 1 million small businesses already use stamps.com. Stop wasting time going to the post office and go to stamps.com instead. There's no risk. And with my promo code ACCIDENTAL, you get a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage, and type in ACCIDENTAL. That's stamps.com, promo code ACCIDENTAL. Stamps.com, never go to the post office again. And now back to our conversation with Cal Newport. One of the outcomes of COVID for me is that is exactly what happened with the business here. Is, you know, I know that you're a professor, right? So you have a day gig primarily. Yeah. I travel, you know, I travel, I meet with clients, I speak at events. I'm pretty much always on the road in non-COVID times. One of the side effects of that was that, you know, really there weren't many systems for a lot of things. It was sort of take it as it comes. And, yep. You know, one of the real, you know, sort of gifts that this season of being off the road gave is that we've completely systemize so many things that used to be just kind of shoot from the hip. And I can't tell you, Cal, how much peace and order that has brought to our business operations here, because people actually respond well when you say, here is the process for this. They respond really well because there's not the anxiety of those open loops, as you mentioned, that I think yeah. You know, it's not just about what the email generates in terms of tasks you have to do. Like you said, it's the weight of all that's undone. It's, oh, there are yeah. 3 or 4 more emails to come before we can sort of get, and you feel that psychological pressure, even if there isn't a task associated with it right now.
Well, this idea comes up a lot, especially with businesses that are client facing that go through this transition away from the hive mind, is a law emerges that says essentially clarity trumps accessibility. So maybe you have a client, you're used to the client can just grab you at any time with emails, and you're really worried if they don't have that access. If I put in place a system that means they can't just hit me with an email whenever they want, they're going to be really upset because it seems like they're going to be strictly losing something, losing the opportunity to talk to me. And yet, time and again, people have the same experience that you did with your company, which is that the people you work with are completely happy with the new, more stringent systems. And it turns out the reason is the accessibility they were demanding before was because they were anxious. There's things on my mind. There's not much structure about how we work together. I'm not a super organized person, so I don't want this just sit on my mind as an open loop. So I'm just going to like shoot Todd an email like, oh, hey, what about whatever? And I want him to respond right away because I don't want to have to remember it myself, and I want to just close this loop. And so if I can just grab him, but if instead there is a more structured system, like, yeah, well, here's what we do. And we have this client call and it's once a week. And after the call, we're going to write down all of our deliverables and we're going to send them to you. So it's in writing. And here's a client extranet where everything is listed. The client's like, great. I don't have to keep this in my head. I don't have to worry about whether or not work is being done or something is being dropped. If I don't have to worry about it, I don't need to bother you. They don't want to bother you. They bother you because they are anxious. So that's a really cool law that shows up again and again. Clarity on how things operate can often really reduce the need for accessibility.
Yeah. And I think one other thing you write about in the book that is so insightful and helpful is, you know, I think we often worship at the altar of convenience, like you said. And you say, hey, don't fear inconvenience. You know, inconvenience can actually be your friend sometimes.
Yeah. Well, this is like the assembly line example. It's why I spend a lot of time documenting exactly the lead up, the experiments and the lead up required to go from building cars in the old craft method, which was very natural and very flexible and very convenient, just like the hyperactive hive mind in the modern knowledge work context, going from that to the continuous motion assembly line at Ford's Highland Park plant. The reason I get into the details of how that happened was to emphasize that the process of figuring out the assembly line was a huge inconvenient pain. It was a much less natural way to build cars. It made no sense, right? I mean, the way they were doing it before made a lot of sense. There's a chassis on some sawhorses and a team of craftsmen who surround it and they build a car. And a factory just has a bunch of sawhorses, a bunch of chassis, and a bunch of teams, each building their own car. And when Ford was trying to figure out a better way to build cars, they say, this makes no sense. It's not natural. It's costing us more money to build this thing. We have to hire more managers to oversee it. And the thing keeps breaking. Because it's really hard to get an assembly line to work right, because if the steering wheel people are going too slow, then the whole line comes to a stop because the line backs up, right? So everything about it was a huge pain, but it was 100x more productive, and Ford became one of the biggest companies in the world after they got that less convenient process in place. And I use that as a metaphor only just to lay home the point that in the history of business and in every other sector outside of knowledge work, people think this way. What are our processes? How can we engineer them to be more effective? The idea that one way of doing it is more convenient than other, that one way of doing it has lower friction than others, that one way of doing it is more easy than others, it doesn't really factor into the equation. What produces Model Ts faster, whether or not it's the easiest way we could do it? For some reason, we resist, well, I have reasons, but we resist this thinking in knowledge work. But if we get past that, it opens up these sort of huge gains in both our peace and the ability for us to produce.
I think that is a fantastic application point for this entire conversation. If we just step back and we ask what will produce the results we want to see better and faster rather than most conveniently, even if it takes us a while to get there, we have to build out the systems. That is a fantastic, fantastic application point for this entire conversation. Cal, this book is amazing. I mean, we have scratched the surface of, I really wanted to talk about the attention capital principle. I wanted to talk about how, you know, all of the Kevin Kelly stuff about what does email want? Cause it has a mind of its own. So much left to talk about, but people read the book. You can read all about all of this. It's fascinating. I think Cal has really hit on something here that it absolutely, he's put his finger on where things are headed or where they need to head. If we want to be sane and productive and effective moving forward. Cal, if people want to come find you, I know you're hard to find. If people want to find you, where can they come find you and learn more about your work?
Oh, so at calnewport.com, there's my longstanding blog where I write weekly essays. I also have a podcast, Deep Questions, where I answer questions from my readers every week about these type of issues. We get into particular case studies, issues they're having with their own life, with their own company. So between those two places, you can get your fill of Cal. Where you won't find me is social media. I've never had a social media account. Turns out that's allowed. I'm also, appropriately so, I guess, hard to reach via email, but my writing itself is not hard to find.
Fantastic. Well, Cal, as you know, I'm a huge fan of your work. Thank you for coming back on the show and for sharing your insights with our listeners today.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Todd.
And as always, thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts or at accidentalcreative.com. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.